Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. When you take a look at the calendar, virtually every month is a national something or other month. But today we're going to hear about a project that roughly around 500,000 people are taking part in this month, to write a novel in 30 days. National Novel Writing Month, or NaNoWriMo, is celebrating its 15th anniversary this year, and it's the brainchild of teacher, speaker, and writer Chris Beatty. Since 2006, roughly 100 novels or so have been published through this process of writing a first draft in 30 days. And the list includes some impressive books: Sarah Gruen's bestseller, Water for Elephants, Aaron Morgenstern's The Night Circus, Hugh Howey's Wool, and a host of popular young adult and fantasy titles. Throughout the month of writing, NaNoWriMo's website provides a ton of help for writers dealing with plot stalls, characters that just don't do anything, writer's block, and other writing obstacles. Beatty says the deadline of having a month to write 50,000 words can often be the catalyst to actually getting a first draft down. Then the real work can begin in revisions and editing to create a novel. He's the author of the book No Plot, No Problem, A Low-Stress, High-Velocity Guide to Writing a Novel in 30 Days. And he joins us today to talk about National Novel Writing Month on Studio Tulsa. Chris Beatty, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
It's great to be here, Rich.
I did not know, you know, there are all sorts of weeks and months throughout the year, but I did not know that November is National Novel Writing Month, or NaNoWriMo. But how did this get started?
It began very inauspiciously back in 1999 when I sent out an email to a group of friends all here in the San Francisco Bay Area just saying, hey, who wants to write a deeply mediocre, very fast novel alongside me? And I am blessed with a group of friends who say yes to very bad ideas. And so I ended up recruiting 21 people that first year, and we ended up tackling it together, and it was such a blast. And the books were not nearly as bad as we had all feared. And so I put up a website and invited more people the next year, and it's just kind of snowballed from there.
Well, and over the 15 years, there's been quite a few pretty good books that have come out of this.
It's true. I think they've all started as beautifully flawed first drafts, but they have grown into great books. We've had at this point maybe 10 New York Times bestsellers. Water for Elephants by Sarah Gruen started out as a National Novel Writing Month manuscript, as did The Night Circus by Aaron Morgenstern. But yeah, we've had hundreds of published books and just a lot of people who have had kind of their whole perceptions of themselves as creative people and writers changed. And those are kind of the biggest success stories.
Now, what were the ground rules?
So the rules are you are to write 50,000 words in the month of November, and you can kind of make outlines, character sketches, collages, playlists, all that stuff ahead of time. But really the idea is to jump into the month and start writing on page one. That said, people write all sorts of things in National Novel Writing Month. So the name is a little bit of a misnomer. I think it should be called International First Draft of a Novel or Other Writing Projects Writing Month. It doesn't quite roll off the tongue in the same way. But we have people who are writing memoirs, who are writing screenplays, writing their PhD dissertations. All sorts of things are happening in November. People just kind of tapping into this great community and terrifying deadline to get something done.
And that's the key, I think, is what you found, is that what writers really need is a deadline.
It's true, and it's so hard to get them in these sort of optional creative projects like writing or art or music when we really need them most, right? We get them at our jobs where we really don't want them, but then when it comes to novel writing, unless you are lucky enough to have a book contract or be signed up for a class, you don't get that sense of accountability in that, oh, God, somebody's going to know if I don't get those words in. And I think we really need that because we're not getting paid to do this. So anything we can get to help us prioritize this project, I think, is key.
Okay, so take us back to the first year. You participated in this. What was that month like?
Well, a group of us decided we were going to get together every night and work on our books together in the same coffee shop. And that group of six ended up kind of going through the roller coaster of this month together. You start out on week one, and you just think, my God, this is the greatest book that's ever been written. Why don't I write novels every month? And then the reality sets in around week two that, in fact, this is just a really flawed first draft. And you kind of lose momentum. And the thing that kind of kept us going was just the fact that we were all there together, and nobody wanted to be the one loser who didn't show up at the coffee shop at night. So we kept going, and by week three, I think we all kind of got our second wins, and the characters started to come alive and do interesting things. They quit their jobs and joined polka bands. And then week four was just this wonderful sense of kind of cruising to the finish line. And I think all sort of marathoners know that sense of, oh, my God, the end's in sight. I haven't died. This was a lot better than I thought it was going to be. And that all six of us that were getting together did write the full 50,000 words. And that group has really come back and won National Novel Writing Month at least five more times.
Wow. And now, out of that first group, you did have some people drop out through the course.
We did. And in fact, every year in National Novel Writing Month, really, of the people who start writing, probably about 20% cross the finish line. And other people fall short anywhere from 49,998 words to, you know, something in there. But the goal, I think, is really to help people get some writing done that they wouldn't otherwise. So every year people kind of come up to me in December and they say, oh, I was a National Novel Writing Month loser. And I say, well, how many words did you write? And they say, well, I only wrote 20,000 words. And I said, you wrote 20,000 words in a month. I mean, that's more fiction than a lot of people write in their lifetimes. And that, I think, the goal is really to help people sort of turn off that inner editor that can make creativity such a chore and really just have fun with it.
Now, ironically, you know, you mentioned the fact that a deadline is so helpful to a fiction writer, but at the same time, you've kind of gone the other route of saying, okay, I'm going to do nothing but write. And you've found that a schedule, having a busy schedule, is actually more conducive to you as a writer than trying to write full time.
Well, I think we've all heard that phrase, if you want to get something done, ask a busy person to do it. And there's something about, you know, this idea that objects in motion tend to stay in motion that I think is really true for novel writing. That if you have a bunch of things going on, I think somehow fitting a novel into a busy life is easier than getting work done if all you've done is open up your schedule with time to write. Because at that point, the twin demons of the internet and television come in to kind of pry your novel out from under you.
That's right, the Jerry Springer syndrome.
Exactly right.
Because there's nothing on during the day, but, you know, it could be mesmerizing.
Hours go by, and you just think, when did I turn this on, and how do I turn this off? And you're sort of trapped. So because all of us that are really into this, I think, started out as just loving books. That's what attracted us to this idea of writing our own. Our expectations are so high because we've read these books that we've loved that have kind of changed the way we see the world. And so when we sit down to write, we think that our quality should be roughly in that ballpark, completely forgetting the fact that that book also started out as a messy tangle of, you know, kind of plots that didn't go where they were supposed to and characters that were sort of one-dimensional. So I think when you compress this all into a month, you cut yourself some slack and you say, hey, nobody's ever written a great book in 30 days, so I don't have to either. But then, paradoxically, I think that kind of frees you up to write a pretty great beginning, middle, and end. And it's going to take revision, but I think every first draft really does. And the goal is to get to the end so that you really see the entire arc of your story, so then you can dive into the next great adventure, which is revising it.
I think going back to the first couple of years you were doing this, it says, you know, you'd start off and you might have a promising beginning, and then pretty quickly into this process, you just get mired in sort of a tangled mess. Sometimes writer's blocks, the characters were not doing anything. And you found that that's probably where a lot of people say, oh, I'm just going to put this aside. And the whole thing of this contest and of the challenge and the deadline is that you keep writing these characters and eventually they start doing things. I was surprised at one of the things you said. It said, you know, after about 2 weeks, our characters got tired of us messing around with them and then they started doing things.
Right, yeah. Well, I think with every writing project, you have these moments of feeling lost. I'm reading this book, Creativity, Inc., by the president of Pixar. And, you know, he says that this is true of all the Pixar movies, too, that at some point every director gets lost. You just, it's such a complex world that you're wandering into, and there's so many details, and trying to keep track of where you are in the story and what this is really about can be tough for one person. So I think that the secret to getting out of that situation is always just to press onward. You know, you're in the weeds, keep going. And you do find that you sort of write your way out of it. I think the human imagination is just such a powerful force that as long as you sort of keep at it, the way does become clear in time. And that feels really wonderful, but it also, when you're in the thick of all of this kind of confusing mess, it feels hopeless as well.
My guest today is Chris Beatty. His book is titled No Plot, No Problem, A Low-Stress, High-Velocity Guide to Writing a Novel in 30 Days. He is the founder of NaNoWriMo, which is a National Novel Writing Month. It's been going on for, I guess this is the 15th year now. How many published books have actually come out of this process now?
So for traditionally published books, people that basically wrote their first draft in November and then revised it, got an agent, the agent sold it to probably a New York publisher or an international publisher, hundreds at this point. And then we've had tens of thousands of self-published or indie-published books.
And probably of those hundreds, the best known would probably be Sarah Gruen's Water for Elephants, which is, it's a wonderful novel, but I'd be interested to know what it looked like at the end of the month.
Right. Well, so Sarah actually has written most of her novels in National Novel Writing Month. And what she does is just, she writes the first 50,000 words, the month ends, and she just keeps rolling through to the end. So 50,000 words is really a short novel. That's a kind of sort of a Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy of Mice and Men. And so she goes ahead and adds, you know, maybe another 50,000 words onto it, and then begins the revision process. And it's really interesting, as the event has grown, more and more professional novelists have used it, because, you know, if you are under a book contract, the idea of moving forward by 50,000 words in a month is very appealing. So we do get authors who will kind of continue to come back to National Novel Writing Month to sort of advance a manuscript that they've been working on and get it closer to the finish line.
Now, when somebody decides to do this, are you getting feedback through the month, or is it just a matter of just sitting, one famous novelist said to me, butt in chair and writing away?
Well, see, the way it works is you sign up on the National Novel Writing Month website, and you create an account, and you can add writing buddies if you have any friends or family that are doing this with you. And then from that point, we basically deluge you in pep. You get a nonstop array of pep talks coming your way, and some of them are from the National Novel Writing Month staff, but some of them are also from great best-selling authors. We, you know, every year have wonderful pep talks from writers in all genres. We've had Sue Grafton and Nick Hornby and Dave Eggers and Neil Gaiman, Amy Bender. This year we have Veronica Roth, who wrote the very popular young adult series Divergent. And so you're constantly getting these emails giving you kind of tips and strategies, but mostly just kind of a you can get through this, keep going message. And that I found is really important. The other big thing we have is local chapters in about 500 cities and towns around the world, where most nights of the week you can go to a coffee shop or a library and find other people that are doing this and just sit down and work on your novels together. A lot of times people just kind of put in headphones and write. There's not even necessarily a lot of chit-chat, but it's really wonderful the way having kind of a social component of writing helps keep that butt in the chair, which is the most important thing.
Now, once the 50,000 words are complete, is there any further work from the National Novel Writing Month group?
There is. So the big situation that most people encounter is, you know, we will probably have close to 40,000 winners this year. And so that's a lot of people who have written a first draft who are wondering, okay, I wrote this first draft, you know, what do I do with this now? And so there are a lot of resources on the National Novel Writing Month website about revision and how to finish your draft and then kind of how to get in there and start identifying whatever problems need to be fixed and then giving you tips on how to fix them. And as the organization continues to grow, I think more and more resources will be put into that because, you know, this really is, for some people, all they want to do is write the first draft, which is great. It feels wonderful. It, you know, makes life a little more magical. It really is a great workout.
It's kind of like running a marathon and finishing in 7 hours or something
exactly,
like that.
Exactly, you know? Yeah. But for a lot of people, they do want to make this better and send it out and eventually have it get published. So they're more trying to put more resources into helping those people get the information they need.
Typically, what do writers, maybe even experienced writers, end up with in that first month, you know, the 50,000 words? Is it mainly maybe a really good plot device or development or maybe a wonderful character? I mean, or is it more than that?
It tends to be a little more than that. So I think, you know, you do get, the goal is to sort of write in a slightly abbreviated fashion where you're sort of leaving out some scenes so that you can get this beginning, middle, and end, because it's so much easier to revise a complete arc, and there's such a value in getting through to the end, because it turns out that what we thought our books were about when we started out is often very different than what we realize they are about when we get to the end. So a lot of people really do have this sense of kind of, okay, this is the overarching arc, here are some of the themes, here are the characters, and then they get such a head start in revising by having that complete picture.
Now, does your group offer, for even, maybe just a person who's maybe tackling the first novel in this approach, as far as giving them ways to get started? I know you have a couple of lists. It says limited planning, but you have to have at least a couple of lists of things you want to achieve in this first draft.
Well, I think it's very helpful to go into it with some sense of who the character is, where it's taking place. You know, we have these two categories of writers, sort of the planners, and those are people that really start a year before National Novel Writing Month begins. On December 1st, they are making outlines, they are making those character studies, you know, and that's great. I think that some people's imagination is only bolstered by having kind of this great sense of where it's going to go. Other people just dive in on day one of the event and just sort of improvise their novel. But I found that there's a really kind of happy middle ground where you do have a sense of the kinds of things that you love in novels and sort of a sense of who this character might be, what they might want, and what might be getting in the way of that.
Now, in your book, No Plot, No Problem, you kind of take us through those 4 weeks. So what's week one like? You said, I think it's trumpets blare, you eliminate your inner editor, and you just start going for it. But what happens by the end of week one?
By the end of week one, you have established these characters, we've met kind of all of the supporting cast, you sort of get to know their ordinary world a little bit, and then usually at the end of week one, what happens is this problem or this opportunity is introduced that's going to sort of drive the rest of the book. That's the best case scenario. Oftentimes what happens is you drink too much coffee, you start your novel about 7 different times, you get kind of confused, you cry a lot, and sort of hide under your writing desk. Then you get up and bravely continue on with the book.
Now, and then week two is when that really starts hitting. You can probably run into writer's block, the fact that you're kind of rereading some things as you're following your character, and you go, oh, this is terrible. This is not going anywhere. And one of the big things there is don't get it right, get it written.
Exactly. And week two also tends to be where the sort of support network that we encourage everybody to develop. You know, one of the tips I give people is to tell everybody you know that you're doing this right off the bat, because I think that gives you that sense of kind of accountability. People are asking about it. You know, you go to your coffee shop and your barista is saying, how's that novel going? And so that will keep you going. But around week two, all of those people that were really excited and interested in your novel kind of get bored with the project. So you lose your cheering section. And then at the same time, you're making these very difficult decisions about what is this book about? You know, what is going to be, you know, the quest? Where is this all going? And that tends to be the moment when people get kind of overwhelmed and tend to drop out.
And then it says in week three, it's like if you're still there and you've got maybe close to 25,000 words, then that support group not only loses interest, they begin attacking.
Right, because at this point, your home is a disaster. If you have any kids, you've probably been neglecting them. Everybody is actively opposed to your book at this point. But, you know, we do find that the sort of month-long novel is something that is much more appreciated by spouses, significant others, and family members than the sort of decades-long novel. So, you know, the end is in sight by week three. I think that's when writers really get their second wind, and they discover that all of the stuff that they had been writing where they thought, I'm not sure what this ninja is doing in my courtroom drama, this doesn't make a lot of sense, suddenly the light bulb goes off and you're like, aha, this is why I have them in there. And you come up with something that kind of brings all of these threads that you've been writing before together into a reasonably coherent story.
And then the last week, maybe you don't actually get to the end of the novel, but hopefully you're getting to 50,000 words, and you're hopefully sort of figuring out where this story is going to end up.
Exactly. And we have one of the things that I love is from the very first year, we had something at the end of the month called a Thank God It's Over party. And for the first year, it took place in my living room, and we all sat on the floor and had champagne. And from the second year onward, we sort of had this tradition where people would gather, and we would bring excerpts from our novels, and we had gold paper crowns that the winners could wear. And so this has continued on, and it's really wonderful where, again, you know, in most cities and towns in the English-speaking world, and then also throughout the rest of the world, there are these Thank God It's Over parties where novelists can come in early December, gather and kind of celebrate and commiserate and wear these beautiful crowns that show they set this ambitious goal and they hit it.
My guest today is Chris Beatty. He's the founder of National Novel Writing Month and the author of No Plot, No Problem, a low-stress, high-velocity guide to writing a novel in 30 days. Now, how many people are going to are doing National Novel Writing Month, this year?
I think we are close to 400,000 people.
400,000. Wow, that's amazing. Now, I have to ask you, what about your own? And you've done this experiment for many years. What have you ended up with?
Of the times that I've done it, I have taken part every year. So this is, I'm heading towards my 16th first draft of a novel. And of those, I would say I have learned something from every single one of them. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't trade any of them for the world. I have probably written four of those that I thought, wow, this could be a pretty good book. And so I've spent a lot of time revising those, and hopefully one of those will see the light of day in the not-too-distant future.
Well, that's great. That is great. And from what you're seeing, I mean, a lot of people are coming away with at least decent first drafts. Has there been anybody that's ever hit the ball out of the park through this month-long process? Or is it just mainly that first step of getting this solid basis of a story there that they're going to spend a lot of time honing and recrafting?
I think it's the latter. Unfortunately, you know, it would be so wonderful if we could just start with the second drafts of our novel. I think everybody would be a lot happier. But,
right,
you know, there's this phrase that you can edit a bad book into a great book, but you can't edit a blank page into anything but a blank page. And I think that that's so true with novels. And really what we want to, you know, help people do is just get those words down on paper and develop a creative habit that can kind of see them through the rest of the year. Because really, once you come out of this month having gotten used to writing 1,667 words a day, it really does sort of fire up your imagination, and you do have this kind of ability to kind of sit down and enjoy this creative process in a way that you didn't before.
Well, I think one thing we should always keep in mind when you think about something like this, that even Mozart wasn't exactly Mozart. He did a lot of revisions.
So true. That's so true.
Well, the name of the book, No Plot, No Problem. This is a National Novel Writing Month. I hope you have a lot of those 400,000 to finish the finish line by the end of the month. Chris Beatty, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Rich.
Chris Beatty is the founder of National Novel Writing Month, which is taking place this month, and the author of No Plot, No Problem, a low-stress, high-velocity guide to writing a novel in 30 days. It's published by Chronicle Books. You're listening to Studio Tulsa. Here's the comments of Barry Friedman.
It's a card. It's called Access Oklahoma, an electronic benefits transfer, EBT, food stamps if you must. Will Rogers is on it, hand around the back of his neck, holding his hat, looking both bemused and amused. Considering where we are and what we're talking about, Woody Guthrie would have been a better choice. He would have understood. I don't feel guilty, said Dawn, 35, walking into Sam's. I need it. Eve, her daughter, needs it. Guilty? No. Self-conscious? Yes. Dawn is a writer. She was, is good at it, but she doesn't know what 10 she is anymore after getting laid off 6 months back. Nowadays, she sits at her desk in her apartment, looking at her resume, her career, her life, searching for the confidence to hit send. This particular job opening wants a mission statement. She wants to smash the computer screen. Her narrative keeps changing. The past, the farther away she gets, is a distortion. The present, the longer it goes on, is suffocating. The future, what future? I'm a loser, she says, the more she thinks about it. She tries not to think about it. She gets $312 a month, or about $1.73 per meal for her and her daughter. Eve just turned 5. Sam's Club at Tulsa Hills on Saturday is crowded. Mecca during the Hajj crowded. Marie Callender's, her boyfriend says, picking up the 8-pack of chicken pot pies. Very fancy. Leave me alone, she says. Eve likes them. There must be 800 ramen noodles packages in here, she says. You want, he asks. No, I don't want, but they're cheap. He puts the box in the cart. They pass bananas, 3 dozen. Can you say banana bread, she asks. Sam's is good for such jokes, but this is the safety net. 12 chicken breasts, a tub of ranch dressing, frosted mini wheats, and a box the size of an end table, 300 individually wrapped saltines. With luck, they all last a month. She makes a list in a small spiral notebook in purple ink of everyone to whom she owes money. Parents, boyfriend, landlord. She gets health insurance from OEPIC. It's $32 per month. That's a tenth of yours, right? Pisses you off. Traitor, then. Your life for her, straight up. 83% of food stamps go to households with children, seniors, and non-elderly people with disabilities. Dawn's anxiety, usually a low hum, roars here. The cart is filling up, the ramen noodles, a package of 12 sesame seed buns, vacuum-packed turkey slices, Diet Dr. Pepper, Capri Sun, soup, frozen vegetables, pizza. They're almost done. She hates shopping. She's given her boyfriend the card's access code so he can go by himself, but today, for reasons she can't really remember, she decides to come with him. Dawn knows she should be embarrassed. She is embarrassed when she pulls the card out from the sheath to pay at the register, but she's worked. She's paid taxes. This is why we have it, right? She asks. Why we have it. About 1 in 6 Oklahomans live below the poverty line and receive such benefits. Benefits 2nd District Congressman Mark Wayne Mullen thinks are being abused, saying at one point he was at a store and saw a couple, and this is his quote, that looked good in tank tops and all in shape and were gaming the system. That's what he intimated. They were gaming the system. Dawn looks good in a tank top, too, and is all also in shape. And then luck for her. A friend knows someone who knows someone, and she got a job. First thing, though, she wanted a margarita, and then blackout curtains for the bedroom. She could have milked the system for another month, her boyfriend told her. I'm not going to do that, she said. Bad karma. Besides, it worked the way it was supposed to. Oklahoma saved my life. Oklahoma saved her life. She accepted the job the day before a letter came from DHS increasing her benefits. Karma. Money's coming in, but her health premium is now $200 per month. Clothes, too, she needs and Eve likes. Well, what doesn't she like? The chicken's gone. There's plenty of ranch. There's one pot pie left. It's been 6 weeks since her last trip to Sam's. The kitchen, now her palimpsest.
Mary Friedman is also a writer, a essayist, a columnist for the Tulsa Voice, and a regular contributor to Studio Tulsa. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.